Warning, this podcast contains bad words and stories about drugs and sex and overthrowing the government. Proceed with caution. Okay. Thank you. And now on to our show. Wake up, brother, we got nothing to do. Let's go outside, just me and you, and build a fort. We'll pack a lunch, won't be home till after dark. Then after dinner we can sneak back out. You know that high school girl I've been telling you about? Well, she gets undressed about a quarter to nine, and we can watch her do it from the big old pine next door. She got a room on the second floor. Well, looks like another fucked up day in paradise.
Well, hello, friends. Welcome to episode 010 of the Daughter of Godcast. Yes, you heard that right. We're trashing that wacky numbering system and getting in accord with the podcast accumulators. This is actually the 10th consecutive week of podcasting, the 10th episode, so welcome to episode 010. 009 is now officially the lost episode, until we reissue the entire Daughter of Godcast series for the Platinum Anniversary Edition. Episode 010. Who said anything about the Illuminati? April 2006. Aboard the Alexander Henry, 200-foot Canadian icebreaker repurposed as a bed and breakfast, a hybrid preservation and income project for the Maritime Museum of the Great Lakes in Kingston, Ontario. Daughter of God rented this big boat for 10 days. In episode 008, we heard from Anne Loading and her impressions of the production aboard the Alexander Henry. The crew complaining about my brusque manner because I was overwrought, overwhelmed, trying to accomplish too much with a finite amount of me. What did I do right? Well, first and foremost, I sprouted. Me, a wild force of nature, a divine creator, dropped into the best sandbox yet deployed in all the cosmos, and then what? 43 years of waiting, of hesitating, of barely even scratching the surface of my power. Lots of Americans are dead by 60 or 70. 3/4 of my time on Earth frittered away, being almost happy. A patient seed at last twisting out a root and unfurling a green leaflet. Making a movie, my script. Taking on way more than my current instantiation could hope to accomplish. Taking on the same amount of work that usually requires at least 2 to 3 people, if not 10. 100-watt light bulb burning at 240. Making up for lost time, for missing crew, supposedly. Back then, hard work was the way to blow through beliefs. Beliefs about myself I had reinforced for 4 decades. The only way to get unstuck was to work harder than I ever had. To remember as I dragged myself out of bed at 4 a.m. to prep for the day's production, that this is the new me, that this was my movie, that everything I was doing was for a brighter and more delicious me. I had decided, for sure. But back then, deciding wasn't enough. Heroic struggle against all odds was what made the gods smile. That's an amazing perspective on why I was pissing people off. Going on location was a shift, a new experimental me. I wanted trusted friends along for sure, because somewhere inside I knew that I needed people who would follow me to the edges of myself. When I was looking for people to bring, I cared less for their cinematic experience and more for their quality of heart. This comes from my friend and teacher, Swami Bua. One night, after a big party at Swamiji's apartment in New York City, I was doing the dishes. Everyone else had left, the guests, the Indian amas with their silk saris and Tupperware, all the other students. Though I'd been serious about yoga and coming to his class for years, Swami and I really didn't know each other very well. He stood in the doorway of the cramped efficiency kitchen and said, "You have a good heart." I melted a little and said, "Thank you, Swami." I knew what he meant. To pull off this movie, I had to have people with good hearts. When Carmen and I sat together in the bar, yes, I saw her as the incarnation of Christina, but I could also tell that underlying that zany, turbulent personality, she had a good heart. That's how I knew I could start making the movie. This was the essential criteria. So, too, when I met and worked with Steve, and when Lena showed up from Craigslist. Good hearts. Anne and I have known each other a long time, since she was 8, and Melanie and I had seen some changes together, too, through most of her motherhood. And Agee has a heart of gold. I was going to melt in the alchemical crucible of the Alexander Henry and be transmuted to gold, or better. I knew this in my gut, but could hardly articulate it. I was about to go way beyond myself, and that's scary. To acknowledge the full import of this undertaking was to acknowledge the risk of failure. Not so much a failure to make the movie, but failure to be fully alive, to lift myself out of mediocrity and into consistent, deliberate joy. I should have sat everyone down and said this. What we are about to do, I've never done before. I've done lots of things like this, but not this. The technical stuff, I'm confident I have that covered. If we are missing anything, we'll improvise. We've got a great script, location, a cozy place to stay, and a cafe that will feed us well. Every worthy endeavor involves going beyond the known. So what don't we know? What don't you know? This would have been an excellent question to ask everyone. Maybe go round in a circle and listen to everyone's answer. Then when my turn came, I could have said, I know I can do this. What I don't know is what is going to happen to me, how I will change. I am attempting to blow through my own ideas of who I am, to demonstrate to myself a level of power I know I have, but have not yet experienced. I've asked you all to come along because of your competence and skill, yes, but primarily because I feel I can trust you. I'm moving right out of my comfort zone with this project. That's exciting, and it's scary. It's exciting because it's scary. Anything could happen. Yes, I've hired all of you, but to me, this is way more than business, and I think we all get that. By inviting you to come along, I'm asking you to stick with me and hang in there, whatever happens. To realize that this is a big deal for me, a big shift in my life, perhaps the biggest shift so far. How does hearing this make you all feel? That would have been a good speech to make. Because it's a fantasy about what I might have done differently, I don't have to locate this precisely. Perhaps before I hired everyone? Before they signed contracts? Or before we got into the vans that early Brooklyn morning, sitting on the parquet floor in the sunshine of my apartment's front room. My friend Milagros turned me on to Michael Brown, developer of the presence process, and he's got this very pragmatic approach to time travel. In my imagination, I can go back in time and make this speech. The change in my brain will ripple quantum-esque into the present, and my now will be transformed, changing everything. If our perceived reality is all happening in the brain, that is. So I'll do that, right after I tell the story that was. And then when you listen to this, you'll be listening to fiction, because I prepared my cast and crew for the intensity. They would have felt as if they were having the best adventure ever. Our 9 days in the big boat would have been a gas, a wild creative triumph, an exhilarating collaboration. And they did. And it was. Why am I telling all this in the podcast? Is there any point in me trotting out my dirty laundry, my foibles and yearnings? Well, these are the real stories behind the movie. And the tagline of the podcast is "The making of the movie made me." So there's that. Also, I like to think that maybe someone out there is hearing a little of themselves in my words. I mean, how many of us are living the lives we know we can? If I was the only super genius who struggled with feeling okay, then that's awesome. The reason there aren't 50,000 listeners to the Daughter of Godcast podcast yet is because everybody's already living their full potential, and my story of discovering how to live mine just isn't relevant to most of the planet. Except the upcoming American elections make me suspect otherwise. I mean, the mainstream candidates? If self-loathing isn't rampant in the USA, how did these two get to be on TV so much? In episode 008, I speculated on the mysterious future history transmissions from the Daughter of God universe. Here's the recent verses regarding the U.S. elections. They're totally geeky. If you get these right out of the gate, which I'm sure Susan Fiske and Benny Mateschik did, then I'll send you a Mediatronic t-shirt when they are printed. Here goes, first straight up, and then I'll take a shot at decryption.
We thought the world our oyster, bright pearls for the taking, cracked crust and drilled deep, now elder gods waking. We broke open their tombs, released unspeakable horrors, a race of naked apes from their distant tomorrows. Great Cthulhu, so grumpy, a too early rising, he gobbled up Trumpy and was poisoned, not surprising. That's how Donald won the Nobel, posthumously from hell. A braggart and dark lord, deleted from the scene. Blame that pantsuited broad, Reptilians 2016. But we're ready for that fight, thanks to David Icke.
Stop the podcast now and email me your analysis at the@dog.movie, that's the@dog.movie, for your free Mediatronic t-shirt, while supplies last, offer void where prohibited. Okay, for the rest of you people who have a life, here's the breakdown. This is a mashup of various mythos, fictional and maybe not. H.P. Lovecraft was a brilliant bastard and wrote some freaky stories involving elder gods that are hugely influential even today. He was also something of a racist in real life. Here's the setup stanzas.
We thought the world our oyster, bright pearls for the taking, cracked crust and drilled deep, now elder gods waking.
The human beings used up the earth's resources willy-nilly, but didn't realize that they were living on a sort of prison for the ancient elder gods, gods who would make Yahweh of the Old Testament look like a Boy Scout.
We broke open their tombs, released unspeakable horrors, a race of naked apes from their distant tomorrows.
So in drilling for oil, mining, and generally trashing the thriving global life support system which keeps the elder gods in stasis, we let them loose. We, naked apes, are the key in the lock. The baddest badass of the Elder Gods is Cthulhu, a humanoid giant with an octopus head and dragon wings.
Great Cthulhu, so grumpy, a too early rising, he gobbled up Trumpy and was poisoned, not surprising. That's how Donald won the Nobel, posthumously from hell.
So Donald is the hero of the Earth. By becoming breakfast, he takes out the badass god. Even Cthulhu can't handle Donald's bitter self-loathing. But wait, there's a twist.
A braggart and dark lord, deleted from the scene. Blame that pantsuited broad, Reptilians 2016. But we're ready for that fight, thanks to David Icke.
David Icke is a hilarious nutcase after my own heart. And he talks about a race of reptilians who treat indigenous earthlings much like the conquistadors treated the Incas and Aztecs, or humans treat CAFO cattle. Supposedly, Hillary is one of these shape-shifting reptilians. She's been on Icke's radar screen for decades. Kind of spooky, actually. In this verse, she engineered the double assassination, and with the head of the snake cut off, she and her kind can mop up the rest of the elder gods and continue the nefarious E.T. lizard agenda for Earth. But, thanks to David Icke, we all know about this, and knowledge is power. I'm not super excited about either of these two, or paying any attention to them. The reason I'm not is because I have made great strides in moving beyond self-loathing. I like their poems, though. Well, we're all over the map on this episode. Aren't we supposed to be talking about the production aboard the Alexander Henry? Come on, ride the roller coaster instead, just for this week. Okay, wait, if you're standing, you might want to sit down. If you're sitting, you might want to lay back and breathe deep and slow. In episode 007, I talked about realizing a world ripe for thriving. Maybe the post-apocalyptic universe of Daughter of God is interpenetrating our timeline to create an interference pattern. Imagine, if you will, a Murphy's Law version of our timeline, where everything that could go wrong has and will. Two simultaneously active timelines might be pretty disconcerting for me to maintain and still be able to safely drive to the shop and save for a stick of butter. But what if one of those timelines was abstracted? Water down the Murphy reality to a signal, a movie. Translate the apocalyptic horror show of the non-optimal universe next door into a story, mere entertainment, which is simply just running an offset operation on the peaks and valleys of the Murphy universe's wave function. Then overlay that movie on our reality, and we cancel out all the suicidal trends. Our timeline is reconfigured, our zeitgeist remediated, our options for catastrophe are curtailed and cut off. We are bumped into more benevolent destinies. This might make more sense than the premise that 11 years of cinematic profusion is coming from just one flesh-and-blood dude, even if he is Dan Kelly. Dan Kelly! I'd then be the local node of the Dan Kelly network, LEDs a-flickering, coexistent across the timelines, many selves overlapping. Perhaps all my selves have formed a super-genius entity, and Daughter of God is our cognitive arc, able to navigate the multiverse. By sloshing out every horrific scenario, both plausible and im, we automatically imply the inverse, wild thriving and celebration. Desire turns decisively towards what's missing, and voila, we slide over to the next best reality. I certainly feel transient amidst the strands, constantly tuning towards a more resonant reality, decisively broadcasting the thrive vibe. Daughter of God can help you tune with me. Unless you want to stay here in this slightly silly timeline. Not as rough as the Daughter of God universe, for sure. Who here expects to swerve around a T-Rex on the interstate, or the undead to start applying for your burger-flipping job? Hardly anyone. But lesser of two evils and divide and conquer seem to be pretty well established here. What about an asteroid impact? A satellite-frying solar wind? Climate catastrophe? Those are not unthinkable scenarios. At the dog.movie FAQ, or Frequently Asked Questions, I recently answered a question I didn't even know I needed to ask. I'd offer this now, but we're rapidly approaching 20 minutes plus on this episode, so maybe I'll leave it as homework. The question is, another post-apocalyptic movie? Aren't there enough troubles in the real world without having to imagine more? I've outed myself pretty significantly this episode. Next week, the United States will have a new president, and maybe if we're lucky, a civil war. They can try sending trucks around to pick up all the listeners of this podcast and put us into camps. Except this episode altered our timeline just enough so that the truck drivers will be all too hungover and keep missing their exit over and over into infinity. So if you're seeing unmarked pseudo-military transports rolling down the highway driven by hollow-eyed police looking very confused, you'll know that everything I'm saying here is true. In episode 011, we'll send them home to sleep it off and continue with our liberation of all beings. This has been episode 010 of the Daughter of God cast with Dan Kelly, writer-director and purveyor of demo-crazy. 11 years of me in how many weeks of podcasts? Can't say for sure, but we're going to keep going. Stay with me, no matter what. Thanks for listening. We've got a big surprise coming next week. Looking forward to listening with you all again.
The baddest badass of the Elder Gods is Cthulhu. The baddest badass of the Elder Gods is Cthulhu. A humanoid joint with The baddest badass of the Elder Gods is Cthulhu. A humanoid joint with octopus head and dragon wings. The baddest badass of the Elder Gods. Baddest badass of the Elder Gods is Cthulhu. A humanoid giant with octopus head and dragon wings. Baddest badass. Baddest badass of the Elder Gods. The baddest badass of the Elder Gods is Cthulhu. A humanoid giant with octopus head and dragon wings.